watch Survivor, and when the show ends, you really wanna talk about it with like-minded friends. It might be hard to find some, but don't you shed a tear. Check out the Purple Rock Podcast, and this is what you'll hear. John will make some dumb jokes, and he likes to yell and curse, and if they're not available, the backup hosts are so much worse. Spend the whole time being jerks, telling you you're wrong, and so we got this other jerk to sing you our theme song. It's the Purple Rock Survivor Podcast.
Welcome to the Purple Rock Survivor Podcast. I am John, my co-host is Andy, and this week we are talking Survivor 46, Episode 8, which, in spite of Q's repeated attempts to make canceling Christmas a thing, was entitled Hide and Seek. And, you know, I was thinking about the various childhood games that one could play on a show like Survivor. And I was going to ask, you know, like, for you, Andy, what would be the childhood game that you would want to play? Were you on this show? And so I'm brainstorming and I'm thinking of all the different types of games that one could, you know what? I had an intro, Andy, and I fucked it up. You know, I quit. I understand if you want to replace me as the host of this podcast. This one's on me.
All right. So you're throwing me for a loop here because I came in here planning to vote you out. And nope. Now there's this, and do I proceed with that? I guess.
Oh, but this is awkward.
That's something I don't. What is happening?
Hey, what is happening is a question that I asked frequently on this episode.
What the fuck was that?
Oh, it was, you know, I cannot remember that, which is, you know, I cannot remember, it could be said about a lot of things, but I can't remember the last time I enjoyed an episode as much as this one. Like, one of my favorite players got voted out, and I was still like, man, what a ride. Like, where's your complaints about 90 minutes now, motherfucker? That this was amazing, right?
Yeah, but think of how much better it would have been now. Yeah, I still think last week was actually better than this one, but I mean, are you not entertained? What the?
See, for me, this one topped last week even. Like, this was great. I feel like also as a two episode arc, like, just absolute fire. Like, when was the last time, you know, especially in the post 40 seasons, I don't know that I've been as like locked in for that two episode stretch as I was for this. Like, this was very fun.
Yeah, it was very something. It's not boring. I am starting to get to the point where it's like, okay, but I'm going to need to see something intelligent at some point. It's okay that I haven't yet. I am certainly not going to deny the power of whatever that was that we watched last night. But man, what the fuck was that? Seriously, John, I need you to tell me, what the fuck was that?
I think part of the enjoyment of it is that there are still enough of the, like, in comedic terms, the straight men left, right? That you can, they're panning to the camera like, what the fuck? They're like glaring, breaking the fourth wall, like, what is happening right now, right? Like, you still see, like, Tiffany, Kenzie, Hunter, Charlie are all like, what the fuck, right? Like, because there are enough of them that are also questioning what the hell is happening, it's good. If everybody was all in and thinking, yeah, this is totally normal and this is what we should be doing, then it would be a little jarring, right? Like, then I'd be concerned. Here, I'm like,
yes. Are you suggesting it wasn't jarring? Because I don't know that I can get behind that.
It's at least for me, the fact that there are analogs in this game that are like, yeah, no, this is nuts. What is happening right now? That made me feel better about this episode.
Yeah, I mean, how I feel about the episode is immaterial because as it's ending, as that's going on at Tribal Council, I'm like, how the hell do I talk about this? I don't know what's happening. I don't feel like I will ever know what was happening. Because, yeah, invariably when the next episode comes around, Q will give some kind of explanation. I will not buy it. Invariably, he'll not be in this game at some point and give exit interviews and explain it. I will not buy it. I don't know what was happening. However, not knowing what I'm talking about has really never been an issue for this podcast in the past. So I don't know why it should stop me now, but like, do you think he was serious? Was that strategy? What was he trying to do? How do you interpret what was going on? What are your guesses? What do you think was happening? Is it because he didn't get rice? I don't know.
Right. And the fact that no one knew that was coming was a real, like,
that was very legitimate. Nobody was faking that. You know, if it was a strategy, it was, nobody else was in on it.
No. I mean, Tevin's an actor, but I don't think he's that good of an actor. And the rest of them are actors. Like, they were legitimately confused. So he went in, he kept this plan to himself and just wanted to sort of quit. Like, what? I don't know. Was like, vote for me, but this is all part of the plan. But it's so, because also it was part of the plan, but you can vote me out because my plan was wrong.
Do you think he wanted to be voted out?
No.
You, John, how did you interpret this as it was happening, or have since interpreted it in the hours since this happened?
I think one thing that I know about Q is that it is beyond interpretation for those of us that deal in reality. So I don't know that there's an answer here, right? Like, it's, you can't crack the code because there's a construct that seems like there's a code to crack. But in reality, it's all just fucking smoke and mirrors, right? There is no real logic behind this, I don't think. I think this was just this man's whim. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go in there and tell him, this is the same thing as his fake quits earlier in the season.
That's the thing. This is number three. You know, that makes me think that maybe it was real, that this is some kind of, you know, deep psychosis reaction to things not going his way, that you can imagine little Q frequently taking his ball and going home,
which is
game
wild.
Going the way.
He's also the person, you can absolutely see him as the guy who'd be like, I would never give up, right? Like,
he's coded that way. Yeah, he's got that, you know, Kobe grindcore coding.
Yeah.
But I'm now believing that what I previously thought was ridiculous, that Jelensky in exit interviews was saying that, you know, Q is the one suggesting that we should quit first. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever, buddy. Yeah, now I think maybe that was true, because it seems like it's Q's go-to move, you know? When all else fails, nothing beats Rock. And for Q, Rock is suggesting that he should be voted out or he should quit the game.
Yeah, he's a tails never fails guy. I don't understand what motivated it, but again, from an entertainment,
I want to figure it out. That's
no, it's not meant to be figured out. That's what I'm trying to get at. Is I don't think you try to understand madness. You simply acknowledge that was madness.
I mean, in part, you might be suggesting that Q is just engagement farming. You know, it's just coming up with wild stuff in order to gain attention. Maybe, like, I mean, you were officially kidding and doing the shtick, but I think he does this, if that's what this is, to gain attention. He wants to be like, oh, no, not you. You're too important. Like, that was the reactions I think he was going for earlier. You know, it's the standard, oh, man, I suck. And you're just, you know, there's a term.
It escapes me at this moment. I can't imagine someone who is one of 17 children would ever be like in need of attention, Andy.
Time for attention. No, that's far out there. But then as it's happening, I'm like, okay, like everybody else, what the fuck? But it's like, okay, well, if it's strategy, I don't know that it was. I certainly can't give him the benefit of the doubt. But I also have plenty of examples in this episode specifically and others that, you know, cue strategy and good strategy, not the same thing, right? He seems to have big ideas. Is it that he knows the vote isn't going this way, so if he just throws a grenade in it, there'll be a bunch of confusion, and then, like, he can carry the day because people vote for him when they're supposed to be voting for Tevin. And then his group votes out X, because I don't know where that is now. Is it still, you know, Tiffany? Clearly he votes for Tevin, so no.
Right. That's the thing, is it would maybe make sense if his vote had gone a different way, that this was all some elaborate plan. But no, he voted for Tevin, as did basically everyone else.
So, yeah, I mean, even Hunter, I think, knows what's going to go down.
Right, he just doesn't.
It's not like him and Tevin get a lot of people on board for the Venus plan.
No.
Man, so, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I mean, I already said it. It's unexplainable, but that's what's going through when I'm watching this, is I'm trying to figure out. And I think maybe all of it is what's going on. Because Q, I mean, this guy is a lot.
He's so much. And I think, you know, the Q skirt thing early in the episode, plus the later callbacks to it, just, I've very much enjoyed the Q experience. Like, Tevin playing off of him with the Q skirt, and then Charlie, same thing. Like, just, this was an amazing performance by Q. The good, the bad, all of it.
All of
entertaining
it.
TV.
He is amazing find for a television show. And it's like, I'm struggling here. I think, honestly, the point you made earlier, I think you might have nailed it. He's one of 17 kids, man. He's just always doing what he feels like he needs to do in order to exist in space and have somebody notice. So, yeah, the cute skirt, now he's doing all of that. Like, he's a funny guy. Yeah. But then there has to be something else to it. I actually think he probably just did hide and seek because it wanted to be fun. Yet now, either he has to show everybody, like us, the viewers, that he's the smartest guy always. Or he just knew, like, okay, the producers are asking about this. I'm going to give him something here. And then he just goes into his Q stuff and we'll get to it. But yeah, it's just like, harkens back to a few, you know, a few episodes when he's like, he can't ever let go of that, like, his newspaper is calling him out by name in headlines when he's a teenager, which is horrifying.
Right. I think
this guy just has, he needs deep help.
I don't think there's any way that this, like, yeah, you could say that maybe he, like, genuinely had some motivation for doing this, which I think there is. Earlier in the season, there's some support for that because he's talking to people and, like, making these assumptions about who they are by who their favorite Survivor player is, right? Like,
yes.
This is not, like, the idea that he might think you're going to garner some sort of wisdom about, like, a player's game and playing style from how they play hide and seek is not out of the realm of possibility, given what we know about him, right?
Oh, no, yeah, no, I think it's certainly there, but I don't know if that's why apparently he's been wanting to play hide and seek for a while.
Yeah. According to Tiffany,
this episode starts with him, like, just steaming because, you know, everybody wouldn't come down to the beach with him for a strategic discussion before the other group gets there. But the other group isn't there. You actually don't need the second location for this. You could have just stayed by the campfire.
Yeah.
But it's like, it has to be Q's way. And if you're not following Q, then there's something wrong with you. And I think by the end of the episode, everybody finds out the dangers of following Q, because eventually it could blow up on you.
I meant to reference earlier. Yeah, Tiffany said that he'd been trying to do hide and seek since, like, day one of this game. Like, I'm just imagining they finished building the shelter and he's like, all right, guys, work's done. ready to play hide and seek? Like, what?
Well, why are not you even building that much shelter because they didn't have a flint and they
didn't
have
good point.
For a while. I want is somebody to do like this become a thing. And then in the process of like everybody playing hide and seek, they'd be like, holy shit, an idol.
Well, see, that's what I initially thought the suggestion was, right?
I'm going to get everybody to scurry away and now I'm free to look for an idol.
Exact. I thought this was a whole like ruse to go idol hunting. Not remotely. He genuinely just wanted to play this fucking game.
And he was making up the rules as he went along, right? Like, cause at the end there, he's like, 60 seconds. Where did that come from?
Right. It's the same thing. It's like, this was not part of my plan. I expected everybody to be found or whatever. Ergo, you know, like, it's really, I think that he didn't win. So he's like, let's wrap this game up.
This is boring to me now.
Right. Speaking of making up the rules, like I thoroughly enjoyed, and I assume you did too. Like this, no one can go against the six except me when I decided to do exactly that last week, right? Like he's very firm on like, you know, nobody can go against the six. But last week he went against the six, but he only did that because someone else went against the six.
Yeah, I think it's internally consistent. And it makes sense to me, actually, not just from like a Q logic standpoint. It's like, yeah, if you go against the six, there's penalty. That's what holds the six together. Sure. And thus, it's consistent, both Tim and Tiffany. But, I mean, at this point, what's the six now?
Exactly. That's the thing. You're going against the six and then down, but then the target... It's a moving target, right? Like now Tim was in the six, but we're still the six. It's not the five just because Tim is gone. It's we're going to bring in a new one so that we have the six. And it's thoroughly entertaining. Like it's the fact that he just molds the plan to whatever his current interest is. Tiffany and Kenzie hit on this last episode. Just like he is just like, ooh, shiny object. And that's the new thing that he's obsessed with, right?
Even at the internal consistency, Tiffany didn't say, we're going to vote out Maria. She was listing some people that she felt were more dangerous than Venus. And bam, that's it. My closest ally in the game has got to go.
Yep.
Because she went after the six.
It really was. Just,
has a new member today.
She just, you know... because she didn't give him exactly the answer that he wanted, it's suddenly like, oh my God, she has thoughts and ideas of her own. She's out. That's it. She's out.
He's just, it's compelling, you know? Again, like I enjoyed the episode. I don't want to make it seem like I'm not, but my one worry is like this season, because of how insane like this was and how many wackadoodles there are still. TMQ. That's a different thing, TMQ. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote that in my notebook. Sorry, there's people who are going to get that reference.
There's like four people listening.
That's fine.
Solid.
If I get four, that's one more than there are Q quits in this game. I forgot where I was
going. I was going to say, like you say that it's an insane strategy or whatever, but you know, I think you actually can learn a lot about people by how they play a game. Because I played a game of 3-on-3 basketball recently, and I think I got some very insightful takeaways. For instance, Matt, absolute lockdown defender, that tells me he's going to get away in the way of my game. Like, he's got to go, right? Like, Mark and Brad don't seem invested enough to me, and I need people that are committed. They got to go. Cardboard Emily cutout, not doing anything I asked of her. That tells me she's not a team player. She's got to go. And Andy just ball hogging all game. Like, I can't have someone that's out here hogging all the glory. He's got to go. See, like, you learn things by taking part in what seem like innocent games.
I love how everything was like, so that makes that person the biggest threat. They can't all be the big threat here.
So good. Just like, what was it that was someone, if someone had played hide and seek,
what was the proper way?
Right.
That makes it like, this guy's my ally.
Yes.
They were hiding there, but then they were like, yo, Q, I'm over here.
It's just, what strategy could they have used in hide and seek where he'd have been like, that is my new ride or die? Like, I don't know. It was never clear, and it was amazing. And you think that it's just Q that is drawing these insane conclusions from the game. But oh no, my friend.
And that would be enough. No. That would, no, it's the Dianu, you know, if it was just Q, but more. There's more.
Oh, then we get Venus. And, you know, I'm never going to hesitate to talk about Venus. What a delight. Like, Venus, same thing. Just these, like, piercing observations. Like, she has seen how these people played a child's game. And they're like, and she's like, yes, now I completely understand their survivor strategy. I know who they are as a person. You were playing a fucking ridiculous game to humor a grown-ass man. And now you're like, no, this was useful. I learned so much.
Maybe to the simpletons here, it was just that. But I see things on a deeper level. Just amazing juxtaposition that the two people who think that they are the best players in the game that are very much not thinking the same way, you know, giving the same confessionals. It was perfect.
It was. And, you know, for those people who are like genuinely Venus fans, I think it's good to have that juxtaposition, right? To let them see, like, just so you know, this is what you're supporting. Because right. She's, I mean, genuinely having the same observations that Q is. She's making the same wild logical leaps.
And that guy ended the episode doing one of the craziest fuck things ever in the history of Survivor. So, yeah, that's your comparison. It's your genius player that both of them are like, that person hid really well, so I know to watch out for them.
But the delusion does make for truly entertaining television. And I've said this so many times. If you're going to be bad at Survivor, at least entertain me in doing so. And damn if these two are not delivering. Oh my God. It is so amazing to watch. Venus, let's rewind
a bit. It's like LeBron and Kyrie each going for 40 in the finals. Oh, it's just these two.
It just, Venus at the start of the episode, right?
Yes.
She gets her victory moment.
It's just what we wanted.
Oh.
And it was even better than I could have imagined.
It was exactly like I was waiting for it because you know it's coming, right? And so I think you have in your head what this is probably going to look like. And then it happens and like exceeds expectations. Like if it was a restaurant, it would have a Michelin star. It was delicious. Just the look on her face, the like
straight note. Back, neck up.
Like, no, yes, so exactly. Got to get the nose up.
Sit and listen to my tale and my tale. Me. Great tale of success. Oh my God. It was amazing in that respect. And then her scene with Devin the next day when she's like, okay, all right, because I'm great Survivor player. Time for me to smooth it over. But in her attempt to smooth things over with Tevin, still making sure to turn the knife and let him know that she's the boss now. Look at me. I'm the captain now. That's that conversation. That's
exactly. And not only that, but just like the way she feels as though she's imparting lessons about strategy to Tevin. Just, you could not have asked.
And then we get the confessional. It's like, I thought that would be hard, but he really took that. And it's like, oh my God. But then here's the thing. See how this episode goes. I now know why Venus probably to this day still is entirely convinced that she fucking killed it this season. Because how did it go? Soda gone. She wanted Tevin gone. Like, at what point in this season is she going to find out where it all comes crumbling down? Final tribal council? I mean, that's probably the next opportunity because I kind of feel like now she's in for the long haul, except for one possible exception. But even there, she'll just be like, well, they're just haters, you know? Like, right. Just couldn't deal with a strong woman.
That's what it is. It'll probably be her against two other women, and she'd still think that. Like, oh, well.
Because at this point, it seems clear people are on that, you know, Venus the goat plan. We already see it with Tiffany. That's what, you know, kicked all this stuff off. I don't know if people are going to vote her out, you know, even when she got... Oh, my God. So, yes, they're having the conversation without her, and she's just stewing. How dare? How dare they talk without me? This is where it all stems from. This is why she has no friends. It's probably day two, people wanted to, like, talk without her, and she's like, no. And they're all like, okay, princess, right? So she goes over there, and then, blah, 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 blah. Why do you guys have to talk without me? And it's like, you no conception that that is highly annoying behavior. And then we get Hunter's like, can we just vote her out? Can we just do that for me?
And not only that, but like, she explicitly says, like, I'm going to go break them up. There's no rules. I don't have to leave. But then they're like, can you leave? And she's like, oh, yeah, okay.
And again, you're not wrong. There are no rules.
There's not.
This is a social game is what it is. You know, and you want to not maybe openly and hostily annoy people. But no. That's weak thinking.
There are no rules, but there are definitely social norms. And so
she has no time for.
When you openly violate them, people will often be confused by that. So it made sense that everyone there was like, what is this? What do you think you're doing right now?
So I'm starting to feel like the only danger she is in getting voted out is when they first come from Hunter and he plays his idol. And other than that, I just don't know if people are going to go after her, which is a huge mistake. You know, she's not somebody, she's not going to go along with your plan unless you can convince her that it's her plan.
See, I like an idea that, like, here's a way that the season could play out that I would enjoy. If every episode, Venus ends up suggesting the target that people have already decided upon, and just, she's going to get to the end and say, you know, I voted correctly every single time. It was never her plan, but she would think that it's her plan because no one tells her the plan.
It will be amazing that her whole final argument will be that she was the Svengali puppet master, and there might be open laughter. I mean, I know one person that's going to laugh really exaggeratedly.
Yes. Throw his head back. Maybe lean back on the bench.
Yeah. So let's talk about that guy.
Yeah.
Because he went home.
He did, unfortunately. And like, he was great in this episode and in this season. Like, I think this episode, though, really highlighted why I enjoyed having him on Survivor so much. I mean, just that scene with Venus where she is schooling him on how to play Survivor, the subtle faces that he is making as he's like, oh, interesting. And also, he did the same sort of thing with Q earlier in the Q skirt thing. But just the way he like sat there and accepted and acted his way through it was wonderful. Like, what a treasure this man was, and what a casting find.
Yeah, he's got to come back, and I'm very confident that he will. But at the same time, I was okay with losing him because he did this himself. All of it, this is his fault.
Yeah.
That it all went this way. And I mean, both this episode, because yes, he did a great job in that scene where, you know, Venus is thinking that she's consoling him for losing his number one idol or ally that he wanted to vote out. But then immediately after that, he can't leave it at that because this guy has a massive, massive ego.
He does.
Which is what makes him entertaining and why I want him back. But so then he does the Venus thing to Liz, you know, and not acting at all, or not even conceiving that Liz is also somebody with power and motivation in this game.
Well,
right? She is just the supporting player to Tevin's show, and that didn't work out so well for him.
The funniest part of that being that she explicitly says in that conversation, you know, I think of myself as someone with a huge ego. And still, Tevin is claiming credit for that move.
That's cute, but really though, back to Tevin. That's not what we're talking about.
Made it a we move instead of an I move.
Perfect. It would have been great.
Yeah. And not only that, I mean, he did it to Charlie earlier too. I think it mattered more to Liz. But like, if you just like clown on Venus and you're like, ah, we got her, I think that
who does she think
so
she is to take away our not only is it not land as badly as this one does because it's just bad, but also it's this bonding experience. That's what you do. You get people together, and a great way to do it is to isolate someone else,
other someone. So great.
Devin wasn't having that because he had to sit there and take it from Venus. So now he has to make sure he claims it, and fine, do that in confessionals, man. But no, so that triggers that. But of course, it all goes back to what I was saying last week, what we were saying when he first proposed it before Nami ever went to tribal council. What are you doing voting out Soda? This is why you don't vote out people who were loyal to you in favor of people who are absolutely not.
Well, I mean, it's what we just said. It's that his ego is very large. He wants to be seen as the one, like, he cares a lot about their resume. He wants to be seen as the one that's running these votes, that is in charge, that is plugged into everybody and has connections with everybody and makes things happen. And so, even though, not just on his face, everyone out there realizes that Venus's narrative about that tribal council is full of shit. No one's going to believe her. He can't just let it lie, right? Like, he has to refute it. Like, no, you could just say nothing. No one fucking believes Venus. No one respects her. You would have been fine, right?
I think, like, his entire motivation for voting out Soda in the first place is he's worried that he was going to have to share credit with her if they move forward in the game. I don't think he has that worry with Hunter. Obviously doesn't have it at all with Liz. So that's why he's like, oh, I got to worry about her. It's like, you don't actually have to worry about her. Not yet.
Nope.
And I said it last week. Do I think Venus will lead a vote to get out Tevin? No. And I still don't think she did.
No.
Do I think that she would be a dangerous vote for somebody else who was doing it? Hey, look at that. I didn't expect to be right this quickly.
If
he doesn't vote out Soda, I think Tevin is still in this game. I don't think Liz was able to gain traction. I'm not sure who she talks to. At the very least, she's not pissed at Tevin for taking credit claim for what she perceives to be her move.
Right. The only thing that maybe she's bitter, like maybe she suggested Soda and Tevin was like, nah, not yet. I mean, but then I still don't think it's going to hit the ego quite as hard as a like, haha, that was my
move. Not yet. We got to get rid of Venus. Like, I think that Liz would have understood that, but make sure. Yeah, no, definitely we will vote out Soda. No. And then, because it doesn't take a lot to get the ball rolling. Like, this is the first big vote of this, merge. Everybody's voting at the same tribal council. Only one person is immune. Like, this is the one. She probably should have survived it but you kept somebody who openly wants you gone.
Yeah.
In favor of somebody who does not want you gone at all.
I don't understand. Why? I mean, I do kind of understand. It's what exactly I just said. Like, it's his ego, right? His need to be seen as the person running things. And like, the motivations of some of these people is pretty clear without playing hide and seek, right? Like, I think I could have deduced these things without a childhood game, because they're often pretty transparent, right? Like, yes. They just give a vibe. And as much as I enjoyed Tevin as a character on this show, strategically, aside from Venus talking down to a strategic game, like, he was not a mastermind in that area. So
that's the thing. Like, I'll have my favorites entertaining, but I always charge it to the game if they get voted out due to their own mistakes. It's like, hey, because I prefer when winners are, less bad at Survivor. That's just like, it feels like I'm concerned trolling and all that. It's like, it's just actually like, is 46 shaping up to be like a Nicaragua or a Gabon, but the people aren't hateful? But it's still just about like, what the fuck? What's going on here? And everybody, I think a lot of people assume that we hate those seasons because of the bad strategy. And it obviously doesn't help.
Right.
But it's also like, I really dislike the people.
Yes.
I think this is what people underrate. It's like, oh, Gabon was all out there and I love the messiness. It's like, okay, cool. I mean, again, that's fine. Those people like things differently than I do. But why I hate Gabon so much is I really hated the people. Like, it was kind of gross to watch.
Yeah.
That's not going to be a case here in 46, right? These are all very interesting and compelling people. But I'm going to need somebody to, you know, appear to be good at it at a certain point. Otherwise, it's just like, I think I'll still enjoy it. I'll still be entertained, but might at some point fall out of my wheelhouse if it's just a bunch of, you know, crazy people bouncing off of each other.
See, and again, I think there's still hope for that because I thought
there is.
There were plenty of people who have given the impression that they think some of this shit is madness, right? Like,
yeah.
Tiffany in particular is surprised that Venus is still in the game, right? Like, she had totally rational observations about why they would want to keep Venus then at this point. And like, she's not too married to any particular alliance or strategy or whatever. And she's just identifying threats, which I think that's good gameplay, right? Like,
now, maybe a conversation you should be able to have with your number one ally.
You would think.
But nothing these people love more than turning against their number one ally.
I mean, better this than last season, right? Like, where it was not enough.
I'm putting it, it's already better than that stuff. Now I want to see, like, can this be elite? And at some point, I need somebody to be good in order for that to happen. Otherwise, yeah, I'll enjoy it and I'll be like, okay. Because here's it, there's still three insane wild cards still left in this season.
Which, if they're played correctly.
I don't know that you can, though, is the thing.
I mean, you could. You never know.
Liz's whole voting strategy has been, who are my allies that gots to go?
But again,
who else is Liz working with at this point?
I don't think.
I guess Venus?
I don't know. Let's discuss whether this was a good move for Liz. Because the answer is, this is too much too soon. But also,
yes.
I don't think that Liz has a grasp on where alliances lie. Like, I just think, you know, by her own admission, this vote was fueled by ego, right? Yes. Just like Tevin not being able to stand beat it. Like, people being screwed by their own egos. Totally understandable. Keeps happening this season. It's going to happen to Q as well. But also, I think just Liz does not have a conception of who would she want to work with. Who is probably in a tight alliance. She's just like, I'm thinking about this vote and I want this person gone with no consideration to the future of her game.
I mean, our introduction to her is like, this person is not thinking about the end game very much.
No.
And she's just like, I'm rich, bitch, you know? Yeah, man. No, of course, this isn't a good move. I couldn't just be like, it's a very bad idea for Tevin to be targeting somebody who wants to work with him and then be like, way to go, Liz. Now, one thing I do think is I don't know if it'll blow back on her as fast, because I think a lot of people will just be like, yeah, but it's Liz, though. Like, yes. When they're like, she's dangerous. And frankly, one of the people that already mentioned that was Q, and everybody's like, you think everybody's dangerous, Q?
Right. If everyone's dangerous, nobody's dangerous, Q.
Well, apparently he doesn't think Hunter's dangerous, so...
Which is wild, but sure. Let's talk a little bit about Q and the six thing, because, you just mentioned Hunter seemingly, like, just a huge blind spot for Q. Like, he's totally fine with riding with Hunter, totally loyal, this is going to be great, is willing to give up Tiffany before he would ever consider giving up Hunter. Where does this come from?
The idea behind like a meat shield type alliance or something like that is sound. The problem is any alliance is better for certain members in the alliance than it is for other members in the alliance, you know? And yeah, like I could see why Q, Hunter, Tevin are invested in this, because it's like, well, people normally go after us right now. So what can I do to prevent that? Problem is, Tiffany, Maria, Charlie, people are normally coming after them right now. So, and Charlie, I think, you know, vocalized it really well. Cool. I'm in a final six alliance against a bunch of people I can't beat.
Yep.
So I don't know that these can ever work. Because eventually somebody's, well, I mean, that the thing is, that could be said of every single alliance in the show ever.
Sure.
Somebody's going to be looking to move out of it at some point. But the problem with this particular type of alliance is it's all type A's, right? It's all alphas.
It's all people who need to see themselves as like the top dog, right? You're not wrong. But yeah. I enjoyed Charlie's assessment of it too. Like I thought everything about Charlie's interactions this week was great. I think he had like a stellar episode.
I actually think he's right now my leading contender for like, all right, we're going to see some good gameplay.
I mean, I don't know about the good gameplay, but he's delivering much more as entertainment than I expected.
I feel
initially.
Like he's able to like walk through, talk to people without, you know, sabotaging himself, look for cracks and try to find opportunities. You know, like he hasn't done anything yet, but I'm kind of at, like, this isn't the phase of doing stuff, right? This isn't the phase of finding things to do. And I think that'll help. And apparently he's being underestimated because he doesn't hide and seek at the right level or something. I can't remember.
I mean, I'm not going to rule out that he ends up being a very good player, but I enjoyed the, like, am I the thing that goes awry? Like, that was a great line.
Yeah.
You know, just his very accurate assessment. It wasn't just to us in a confessional. Like, he talked to Maria about it too, about how, like, yeah, okay, first of all, for him personally, getting to the end with that group of six is probably not his best strategy. However, he's like, no, I definitely want in, because he wants those options, right? Like, you want to be in that alliance until you don't want to be in that alliance, because it's sort of a non-aggression pact. Which,
yeah,
fine, so that he's free to make some other moves. Like I said,
yeah, a non-aggression pact, but he was quick to point out, but, you know, Tim's Poland in this, right? Because, like, Tim was in the six.
I mean, and he points it out to Maria, too. She's like, he's like, you know who was initially in my spot, right?
She's just like, details.
Yeah.
Because I think for her, it was like, that was never really Tim for me, so.
Right. Like, she sees it as no big deal, and he's like, I don't know. It seems kind of risky to me. I think,
but yeah, like, within the six, the way this one comes about, and if you wanted to put something together like this in the future, you got to make sure everybody is actually invested in it. And where how this one's put together is three dudes are in an island and like, let's do this, and then I'll bring someone. And yeah, that perfect for Hunter. Him and Tevin are already kind of simpatico. But yeah, Tiffany and Maria are like, but what now? You know, like, I'm agreeing to what now?
What did you
just
sign me up
that
for?
Tiffany's in. Yeah. Like, other examples of this happen for, yeah, I think Amanda in Micronesia was the one I was thinking of, but you just put me in a final deal with people I don't know. And you see that Tiffany, you know, says yes, because that's what you say, but clearly not invested in the six in the same way that, yeah, Q was.
I think one of the things that I enjoy so much about the six is that I bet you next week Q's right back to talking about the six, and it's a new six, and there's no mention of how his original plan failed. It's just like, I feel like he's going to stick to this idea of the six, even though two of that, like a third of that six, is now gone.
It's been pretty ineffective at protecting the members of it. It's true. Hey, so I think this, there was a way that this wasn't going to be Tevin, you know, like once it started, the ball started rolling, and now Q, like, while letting Hunter know, it's basically just, you know, protecting Hunter. It's number one objective in this game, apparently.
Which is wild.
But they didn't need to give up there. Like, it wasn't over at that point. There was a way that if this alliance minus Tiffany is actually a thing, that they would have won. So, obviously, it depends on what Charlie and Maria are going to do. And maybe, you know, Q just feels like they're going to vote for Tevin. That's probably what they told him. But there's motivation for Maria to vote out Tiffany as opposed to Tevin, right?
I mean, potentially.
Tevin
sure.
has worked with her in a vote.
she's heard that Tiffany's going after her. That's why they were targeting Tiffany in the first place. So if Tiffany is thinking of voting out Maria, Tevin is not. Tiffany has an idol. So like, there's a way. So if you can get them on board, that's two. Obviously, you got Q and Hunter. That's four. Tevin is two votes. That's six. That's one more vote than the other side has. Like, it shouldn't have just been like, there's nothing we can do. All we can do is either vote, you know, for Tevin or apparently quit at Tribal Council. Like, those are the moves. Now, obviously, for this to pay off, a few situations would mean to be different than the situation on the ground was. One, it would have had to not be Q, thinking of all of this stuff. Yes. So right there where it's failure. Frankly, probably needed a more creative thinker than Hunter to figure it out as well. A third thing is, and the thing that clearly they never got around to, was talking it over with Tevin. I don't get the impression he was ever informed that he was in the hot seat here.
No.
And then, I mean, another thing that was difficult is when Hunter decides, okay, no, how about we talk about this? That makes sense to me. This is what I'm getting at. Liz is involved in the conversation. That's a tough way to swing it.
Yep.
But again, Tevin was never one of the people involved. And that's, of course, where it becomes difficult. But like, it shouldn't have been, oh, no, it's over for the six. You have six votes without Tiffany still.
But also, Liz is involved in that conversation because Hunter really goes from hearing Tevin is the target to let's go have a conversation. With no further details, right? Like, had he gotten the information that, like, oh, I think, you know, Liz is spearhead, or at least partly spearheading this effort, maybe then he does not include her in that little sit down.
Yeah. Now, I do believe that this is fairly last second type stuff. I do too. But again, like, there should have been a counter maneuver at least planned out with Tevin's involvement. But I guess at that point, Q is afraid of bounce back on him or whatever. Yeah, it would, so is Liz, you know. So, again, maybe if there were some better players involved.
Yeah, we'll see. The explanation we got from Venus is one of probably the few things that we can trust Venus on. I think they were genuinely very close to going to Tribal Council at that point. And so there was not a lot of time. For
not a lot, maneuver. But I also feel like if they're like, yeah, give me a minute so I can give you some television gold, right. They'll find a way.
Sure.
So yeah, this was a bad move for Liz, obviously, yeah, very bad move for Tevin and stuff, but who was this a good move for? Who do you think that like this and all that attended to, who was going to come out of all of this in a better place than they were before?
First of all, me, the viewer. Secondly,
but you did lose Tevin though, so
that does suck, admittedly. Like that's a big L. And you know, I think Probst in production too, like, well done. Like, this was what a win for them. But going forward, I mean, I think it's helpful to people like Kenzie and Ben, because this alliance of six never actually got to take hold. Because if it was a legit strong alliance of six, and I don't think it was ever going to last that long.
Clearly not.
Charlie's assessment is very spot on. But if they had held long enough to start taking out other players, it wasn't going to be long before like Kenzie was gone or before Ben was gone. So for them, this was great.
Yeah, I think Kenzie's the biggest winner of all of this. And that's also a positive for me. It's like, yeah, she wasn't in a great spot. I never felt she was doomed because I felt at some point Tiffany was going to be like, no, this isn't working for me. You know, Kenzie helps me. You guys don't. And then maybe something would happen there. But it had already happened now. I couldn't. Clearly, Q and Tiffany aren't a thing anymore. So that helps Kenzie as well. And I mean, she has a connection with Ben. The difficulty is like if Tiffany and Kenzie were going to now form a new alliance, the most likely candidates would be Ben, Charlie, and Maria, and that the numbers aren't working really in Tiffany and Kenzie's favor. But I also don't know that there is going to be an alliance. I do think there's just going to be kind of a lot of situational voting for the next little bit.
So that's where the wild cards come in, right? Because you have no idea how a Liz or a Venus is going to vote. So you just need to get one of the, like, again, just have your plan and your target and then have Venus suggest that same target to you and be like, it's brilliant. And like, just really Just tell her, Venus, you're killing it. Oh, wow. Your strategy is on a level I can't comprehend. And then she's locked in for that vote, which you had already planned.
And I do feel like Kenzie's one of the better equipped players to be able to work Venus over like that, in that, you know, she seems capable of talking to people that she doesn't like in ways that are complimentary to her, you know, being in the service industry, that sort of thing will help. And Liz or Venus could absolutely help with a vote or two, but they could also hurt for a vote or two, you know? It's it's a dangerous game. I think Charlie and Maria, I think this worked out really well for them as well, because I think they were the ones least situated in the six. Not a big leap. Charlie wasn't in it until this episode. Maria was placed in it by somebody who wasn't even really her ally. And frankly, she was like, if this is an alliance of, you know, typical, alphas or big targets, she's the least, she's the one that doesn't look like she's, you know, meets the descriptions. But now that's not a thing, and they're connected. I think Charlie going to Tiffany in that tribal council to tell her, oh, he told me about your idol, but don't play it. I think that works in his favor, because now I think Tiffany, I can work with Charlie. You know, he already has worked with Liz. He's already worked with Venus. Venus thinks that she's Charlie and Maria's great protector. Like, it's a thing we didn't talk about, but another, because there was just so much, right?
So much.
But another beautiful thing of two episodes ago is after she gets the vote and it's going, she sits up imperiously and touches each on the shoulder. You know, like they have been blessed, and you know, like, and she's given them their stay of excuse. You're welcome.
Yes,
it's what she's doing there.
I'm so happy I could do this for you.
Yes, the touched by the god that is Venus. So I think their position now, nobody's coming for them. Like, they got Q to deal with, they got Venus to deal with. Hunter is always out there. So they still have Ben. They have this connection to Tiffany now, thus maybe Kenzie. Like, I think they're sitting in a good spot, but who knows, man? Like, this thing just blows up all the time. But sure. I think for the most part, like, yeah, Charlie, Maria, and Kenzie. And I do take your point about Ben, and that, you know, he was outside of the six, and now there is no six.
Yeah.
That was well observed also by Tevin, when it's like, yeah, when Tiffany won't give him a name, it's like, there's only but so many names here if it's not one of the six.
Right.
But we're talking about waiting for out after a tribal count or after the challenge. Give me two names and that's all we need.
Yep.
Which actually, I guess it's not here. We should probably remark on it. Tiffany handled that all very poorly. Like,
she did. I think, you know, the thoughts that she had were fine. I think it's who she communicated them to that were not fine.
Yeah, and she was. It was very Tim type gameplay from her. Like, oh, I'm not going to commit to anything. And I'm very smart for being cagey about this. And everybody's like, wow, she's really cagey about this. So.
The one other thing from this episode was at the challenge, which, again, entertaining.
Fun stuff at the challenge.
Yeah. Second week in a row where I've been like, you know, the challenge actually added something to this episode.
Not say for this challenge itself, like I'm almost done it with it. You know, I know it's a classic. It's not going anywhere. A lot of people like it, but it is a challenge in which immediately when you get to it as a viewer, you can name like the 2 to 3 people that have a chance and everybody else doesn't. Right. Like, when's the last time somebody surprised you by winning this?
Well, you know, what's funny is like one of the first names that I said was Kenzie. And she
so
was
did
like,
I. Yeah. So we were wrong about that. I was like, this is going to be. Yeah, I was like, this is going to be Kenzie, Venus, or Hunter, because Hunter, you're just going to say that about everything.
Right. So, not only that, but we also get the rice negotiation that we've gotten for the past several seasons at this point, right?
Yes.
And, you know, we had talked a long time ago in San Juan del Sur about how they probably broke the whole negotiation system with Jeff. Do you think that this episode is going to have an impact on future rice negotiations?
Yes. What kind of impact? I'm not quite sure yet. But like, Prost has been on the record that this the motivation for this is they recognize how many calories these people need and when do we need to give them more in order to. So like, they're not doing this out of the goodness of their heart. They recognize that these people need some food. in order to carry them through for the rest of the game. Like, they, you know, they've studied it, they talked to nutritionists, all this, and they didn't get it, right? And so if this is your mechanic to feed your contestants and they just don't do it, which had never happened before, what else you got? I feel like there's going to be something else. Who knows if they'll react as quickly. I can see it that maybe they stop the negotiation, which was just the worst named thing for the past like three seasons. It's not a negotiation. It's you do this thing I'm telling you or you don't get it.
Right.
I do like Tevin's like, not even a negotiation, Jeff. And he used the right words to the point where Jeff is like, okay, well, maybe this thing.
Right.
But I also don't think that the show is ready to give up on the whole you got to earn it ethos of this new era.
And that's my take, essentially, is I think that they want them slash need them to take that trade because they like this whole danger premise, right? It's not just that they need to keep the cast fed so that they will actually perform and entertain people. It's also like this idea that they're interjecting an element of danger into this game by their giving up their chance at immunity. But their bluff got called. So I think, you know, probably they tweak or adapt next season in some way because there's enough time. I mean, this was the second of the cycle. So, you know, when we come back for 47, they will have had months to plan. Yeah. So I'm expecting that there will be a change by the time we get to next season. Also, at this challenge, like, you know, we talked about the negotiation. I enjoyed Charlie's leverage argument. Like, that was great.
That was great. I'm on board for Charlie now, you know?
I know. Like, I mean, he genuinely delivered this episode. I was very much entertained by Charlie. And
he's got, like, a nice sense of humor that kind of aligns to mine. It's, you know, it's not showy or anything like that, but he gets his zingers in there.
I liked the, you know, the shit talking at the challenge. That was good stuff. And, you know, Probst fucking with Q and Liz about how he could have lasted at least 20 seconds on there. I mean, it's just, again, another entertaining immunity challenge, which is not often the case for me. It's usually a point where I'm like, you know, I'm not so super invested. Like, just let me know who wins. But, you know,
it's been several minutes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing. There was another callback to Jelinski. Like, for a first boot, this man has been referenced so much. Like, we're going to have to do a top three first boots list or something at some point because, like, who is getting this much heat as a first boot? I'm impressed.
Yeah, we'll carry his name out. Yeah, I was thinking one thing that, like, going with the, like, the show's logic about how they can't just give them anything is maybe do something like everybody, like, some type of challenge, not this one, but some still kind of endurance challenge. In order to gain the rice, only X amount of people, like, X amount of people have to last this long or something like that. So then it feels like something they did, but hopefully they set it at an achievable mark, right?
I don't even know if it'll be that, but I think you're on the right path. They're going to do some sort of modification that still makes it feel like they're earning, but then there is some element of danger involved. Even if it's just like they used to do before where, like, oh, you know, you can sit out right now and here's food.
Yeah.
Even something along those lines, I would
get. Yeah, it could even be like wait for the challenge to start and then like negotiate for it.
Sure.
Which is by the way it used to be.
Yeah,
they would have had to go pretty quick for this one.
Yes, they would have. Q's immediately sliding down the pole and like, but wait.
Yeah, I mean, Q was never going to win that. No. I have no problem with it. You know, like that's kind of my point about the challenge is that it's like there are certain body types that just can't do it. Yeah. Now, that's true of other challenges too. That's why I haven't had a problem. And usually it's inverse, right?
Yeah.
People do well at this that aren't going to do well at other things. And so my whole point has also been stop complaining about the challenges that favor people with strength because there are challenges that don't, right? Yeah. That actually put them in a disadvantaged position. It's just, it's gotten to the point now where it's like, okay, I know there's three people who have a shot at this and nobody else does. Now, Charlie surprised me at being second. You know, other seasons, maybe he would have won against Hunter, who could apparently do this challenge upside down.
Mm-hmm.
I like how everybody's like, oh man, he's put a lot of attention on himself. It's like, I think he'd been put attention on
yeah,
himself.
Yeah, I think everyone was pretty clear that he's good at physical challenges.
Yeah, I don't know that that was the wake-up call for he's anybody.
Slipping
you know?
Under the radar there.
So at this point, whatever, stunt. His only path is winning out, so do it. Hey, and plus the idol that he has. So
you know what did kind of slip under the radar, though? There was a Whitney Houston reference in this episode.
It was so brief that I'm like, am I just hearing it? Because that's all I'm listening for now. It's like a music reference. So I had to confirm. But yes, during Hide and Seek, Charlie, when he finds Tevin, is like, hey, Whitney Houston, which apparently is like Tevin's favorite. I guess, Emma pointed that out to us when I was getting confirmation. Did I really hear Whitney Houston? She was his favorite growing up, and why he got into acting. Which isn't a whole other thing I almost want to unpack. It's like, which Whitney Houston performance was the one that inspired Tevin? I'm going to go with the preacher's wife, I think.
Oh.
Because I feel like he grew up in a household with a lot of Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Oh, what's the other one? The Shoop song.
Waiting to Exhale. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be it.
Anyway.
I feel like it's Waiting to Exhale. That's the one.
We're not here to talk about Whitney Houston movies, though. No. But bonus coverage right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, really.
Top three Whitney Houston songs.
Okay. Let me go first. I'll say number three for me is I'm Your Baby Tonight. Just because, you know, it's upbeat. It's fun. You know, she shows off her range a little bit. And it's kind of poppy, which I enjoy.
Well, see, it's more than poppy. I actually did consider it, but it's not on my list. It's her finally delving into, like, the New Jack Swing of the era and what R&B or music was sounding like. And this is coming off of two albums that a lot of people critiqued as not being very urban is, the euphemism they'll use.
There's a lot point of where, scare quotes around that word.
Yeah. To the point where she kind of got booed at the awards, the BET awards. So after this, she's like, you know what? No, I'll do the thing. But what's interesting is the version that we know of I'm Your Baby Tonight is, New Jack Swing, backed by some of the mega producers at the time. I can't remember. I don't think it was Teddy Riley, but you get the idea. European version? Nope, they got some white producers up in there. It's like, oh, we don't want to mess with the money too much.
So what's your number three? Sorry.
Yeah, so I went with How Will I Know, which is probably the first Whitney Houston song I ever heard. Fun, dancey. This is off her debut album. It was written for Janet Jackson, and she passed on it. And I can hear that. But yeah, it's fun. Her other big dancey song from back in there, maybe I'll save it because it might be on your list.
Mm-hmm. It might be.
But yeah, mine's How Will I Know.
All right. Number two, I'm going to throw you a curveball here. The Super Bowl national anthem.
I was wondering.
How the fuck did she make that a banger? Like, it's the national anthem. It's the most boring fucking song. But I was like, damn, she sang the shit out of that thing. Like, it was the only rendition I have ever heard of our national anthem where I was like, damn, this is a good song. It's not a good song. It's terrible. She's just an amazing singer.
Have you heard Marvin Gaye at the NBA All-Star game?
Oh, I don't know. Have I?
Yeah, that'd probably be the other one that I think you could go for. Yeah. No, I mean, I of course was not going to pick that.
No,
but I could totally see somebody picking that. Because here's the thing. Whitney Houston is on the short list of greatest singers of all time. And I don't mean R&B singers. I don't mean 80s singers. Flat out, the human history of vocalizing music. She has an argument for it. But for all that talent, the immense talent, she really doesn't actually have that many classic great songs. And I think that's because of production. You know, she was let down by producers, you know, and some of it's the era that she came up in. It's you listen to her songs and you cannot take them out of the era that they're from. The production is just so loaded with cheesy 80s stuff. So, yeah, a song that is otherwise just the glorification of war doesn't matter because her instrument is so powerful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have no issue with that.
And what was your number two?
Nine Number Two is like the closest thing that early Whitney Houston has to like edge. And that's, of course, because it's a cover song would help, is Saving All My Love for You. Because it's a song about her having an affair with a man and just waiting for him to come around to, you know, hit it. Her gospel mom, really not a big fan of her singing the song. But, you know, she got it on there. And apparently she was having an affair with a married man at the time. So
she spoke from experience then.
Yeah. Here's the thing. So in the 80s, when she, you know, first arrives on the scene, it's huge, huge, huge. She's in her early 20s. But all her music is like adult contemporary, right? Like it sounds like your mom's music.
It was my mom's music.
Yeah, it was too. Same. Yes. And that's where there's a bit of a disconnect because, again, the talent is undeniable. But even this song, it's like she's 21 years old when this comes out. And it feels Jesus, like.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And again, it is cover.
Sure.
So it's not from, personalized. Oh, spoiler alert. A lot of her best work is. You already have one. But yeah, so anyway, that's number two. I'm guessing we probably have the same number one, but you go.
Do you think so? So mine was, I want to dance with somebody. I like her poppy stuff. Like, the thing is, I know she's an amazing singer and she can hit those ballads and like, she's got great vocal range, but like, just as a general rule, like, I'm not down to listen to that stuff very often. I can respect it while not loving it. It's like the Janelle Monáe thing. Like, I can tell she's a really good artist, but like, I want to listen to like Tightrope. I don't want to listen to her like singing that much. So same with Whitney, like amazing singer, but I prefer a more upbeat song like I Want to Dance with Somebody.
Well, there you go. So that is the one I was hinting at.
Yes.
Whereas I went with How Well I Know. And I think just what separates them is when I listen to I Want to Dance with Somebody, parentheses, that loves me, end parentheses, that song stuck in my head for like 2 weeks, which I did last night. So I'm in for it now, you know. So that's what kind of holds it out. But yeah, kind of both songs, fun and danceable, but also just so 80s, you know.
They so 80s. You're not wrong. Like, you're very correct about being unable to pull them from the era in which they are in.
Like, yeah, it's just tough. There's no timelessness to it. Like, even Saving All My Love for You, a little bit more timeless. It feels like an R&B standard, but it still has that 80s sax break. So it's just, The Greatest Love of All, not on my list because that song is just corny as fuck.
Yes.
Starts with like the blinking Casio keyboard type sounds. It's like, we had this amazing talent and we just couldn't pair her up. Like, and some of it obviously is also the tragic end that, she dies in her mid-40s.
Yeah.
But it's like, she never had that era. Somebody's just like, how do we just take somebody who, boundless talent, and actually put some songs. So my number one is I Will Always Love You. And I'm often torn. Like, do I like this better than the Dolly one? Do I like the Dolly one better? Ultimately, it doesn't matter. They're both great. I think what I like about Dolly's original version is the vulnerability of it. It's quiet. You feel almost for a minute that she believes the it's not you, it's me sentiment behind it. You never believe that with Whitney, because there's just too much power in her voice. But in the end, that in itself is the whole deal. It's why it's great when she gets to that third chorus and goes on that run. That's one of the great runs in music history. And it's certainly a better effort than, like, say, the 2024 attempt to take a vulnerable Dolly song and make it about how much the protagonist kicks ass. That one, not in favor of, but for I Will Always Love You, that's
I have not even heard that cover, and yet I know of which you speak because it did not go over well from what I hear. Also, shout out to my best friend who routinely, we'll say, memorializes Whitney Houston. He'll know what I mean by that. So that's it. Like, I love doing a joke that exactly two people will understand, and that was just
I'm not even one of them.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, yeah, if you have your own Whitney Houston lists, share them on our website at purplerockpodcast.com. We got anything else to talk about for this episode?
I don't think so. It's pretty packed stuff. I hope this keeps up for next week because I've genuinely enjoyed tuning in and discussing it. So please more, sir. That's to Jeff Probst. That's who I'm referring to in that, sir.
All right, let's hit the theme music.
This is the copyright-free outro to the Purple Rock Survivor podcast.